Andrew, and I'm sure, like many young guys, you know, watching the Jets in the 80s, like, trust me, I grew up in Edmonton, and I marveled at Howard Chuck from afar. He was unreal to watch.
Oh, he was just such an incredible player, an incredible person, Jason. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I mean, I just wrapped up 4 hours live on TSN 1290 in Winnipeg, talking about this loss for, you know, the city, the province, the Jets organization, but really the hockey community worldwide. He was our first true superstar in the NHL era. I mean, you think about what the Winnipeg Jets did back in the WHA with Bobby Hull on the hotline. And then moving into the National Hockey League, you know, they were only able to keep two players. And it was a train wreck for the first couple seasons. I mean, Dale Hawerchuk came to a team that won 9 games. They were historically bad, and that's how you get the first pick. But, you know, immediately he wins the Calder Trophy. He absolutely lit this city on fire. And, you know, they ended up being 500, didn't look back, and, you know, ended up, you know, unfortunately living in the toughest neighborhood in the National Hockey League in that Spice division in the 80s, but really brought this Winnipeg Jets team to prominence. And, you know, his impact on the city and this organization continues today. I mean, he was sort of the leader of the Winnipeg Jets alumni, had such a big central role in that amazing Heritage Classic with the Edmonton Oilers a few years back here in Winnipeg. And I can tell you, it's a pretty heavy emotional show today as we heard from Winnipeg Jet fans around this province, you know, airing out their thoughts on the loss of a legend.
Well, obviously scoring tons of goals is makes you, you know, beloved by fans. But what did he do in the community, or how did he treat fans and makes them, you know, seem to extend past just his success on the ice?
Fred, it's funny you bring that up because, you know, we wanted to hear everyone's memories of Dale Hawerchuk today on the program. And literally from the moment that we said, give us a call or fire in text, we started getting, you know, tons of feedback. And, you know, maybe incredibly, because this guy is a Hockey Hall of Famer and one of the greatest to ever do it here in the city of Winnipeg, very few of the calls or the thoughts had anything to do with actually what he did on the ice. It seemed like back, and again, it was a little bit of a different time, but I'll tell you what, it was just one personal story after another about, you know, a chance meeting with Dale in public at one time, the Junior Jets fan club back in the 80s, anything to do with that and how, you know, these memories were so impactful on so many people. And, you know, the one common thread over and over and over again was what such a quiet, down-to-earth, humble superstar Dale Hawerchuk was. And, you know, in a lot of ways, for a city that is, you know, sort of been an underdog for a long time, and, you know, many people will say that, you know, Dale Hawerchuk was the most underrated player around. It was the way he embraced Winnipeg, made it his home, and treated the people around here that I think really made him the perfect superstar for Winnipeg in the 1980s.
You know, and it's interesting that you mention a lot of the personal stuff, because I wonder if fans today are going to have the same opportunities to have that, because I think a connection to players goes far beyond just watching them play the game, right? And I think that there's almost, you know, there's a much bigger divide now between fans and players ever before, as far as even just, you know, chance meetings and kind of seeing them as everyday guys, because, you know, most of them are such, you know, multi-millionaires that it's very different than it was in the 80s.
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt about it, Jason. I mean, we're in an entirely different world now. I mean, these players are, you know, they're stars at a very early age. They're media savvy. They're taught to watch out for themselves. We live in a world of social media, so they obviously do need to be careful of things as well. But there's no doubt. I mean, I don't think the divide between players and fans has ever been bigger, to be honest with you, and I don't see it getting any smaller. In fact, I mean, it's another, you know, topic entirely, but what's happening with media access for players and whatnot as it continues to shrink, there's something that is taken away from that. But, you know, the 80s, and I mean, we hear stories, you know, from friends in Edmonton about Gretzky and the guys, you know, running around, you know, young men at that time, but also relatively accessible for the star power they had in the world. And I think it's a very astute point. I mean, you know, and it's not maybe to the fault of players. Maybe some guys would like to do more than they're able to or what, but I would have a hard time imagining any current athlete, you know, over the past little while, outside of maybe Teemu Selänne, who is, you know, sort of in that rarefied air with Dale Hawerchuk here in Winnipeg that would have had anything close to that impact. And a big part of it is just, you know, the greater divide between the star athletes now and the people that pay the freight.
When you look at, you know, Hawerchuk, and you saw some nice tributes pouring in from guys that he even played with, you know, like Team Mussolini talked about putting a really nice tribute up to him. You know, what did he kind of said? Did he set a precedent a little bit for that community and the players, how they interact? And what is this, I think, the smallest market in the NHL?
Yeah, you know, he really did, Jason. And again, you know, I mean, I'm speaking to this thinking back of those 80s as, you know, my earliest hockey memories and just a kid that grew up, you know, idolizing Dale Hawerchuk and the rest of the stars we saw playing for the Winnipeg Jets. But, I mean, he set the standard in a number of ways. Certainly the way he conducted himself as a 19-year-old captain in the NHL, embracing all of it, doing what he did in the community, you know, was an incredible example for everybody else within that dressing room. And for the most part, especially in that era, at that time, they were doing exactly that. The other example that he set, which was incredibly important, was a standard of excellence and going about your business a certain way that, you know, when you're coming into a 9-win hockey team, probably wasn't there. Now, there were 7 rookies on that team before Dale got there. They obviously were going to improve and develop. But at a very early age, speaking with players and coaches alike that were with Dale Hawerchuk in those early years, he came with a sense of confidence and an expectation of excellence and winning. And I think that competitive determination did wonders to turn the Winnipeg Jets around from a laughingstock early in their time in the league to a team that was able to give even the great Edmonton Oilers some of their toughest tests.
Roger Peterson joins us from TSN 1290 in Winnipeg, discussing the life of Dale Hawerchuk, who passed away today after a courageous battle with cancer. He was 57 years of age. And what was interesting to me, when he came in as a rookie, Andrew, I looked it up, his first 10 years in the league, only Wayne Gretzky had more. Now, Gretzky was just on a total different level. He had 1,800 points. Hawerchuk was second, and he had 1,018, right? But the next guy on his team was Steen, who had, 640. Like, the one thing Hawerchuk in his time in Winnipeg, like, if you look at, like, Edmonton, you know, they had lots of offense, you know, and, like, a lot of the other guys had someone else to go with them. He never really had that. Like, Paul McLean was good for a while, but you know what? Like, I always wondered how much better Hawerchuk would have been if he'd had a running mate.
Well, Paul McLean would be the first one to tell you that some of those numbers look a heck of a lot better, because he was one of the lucky guys to sit on the wing with number 10 in the middle. you know, there's no doubt about it, Jason. I mean, Dale Hawerchuk... at that time, many people will look at that era and say that, you know, he was, you know, the third best player of that generation in the National Hockey League behind Wayne and Mario. And you compound it, and it's a little different for Gretz, because, I mean, you know, he arrives in Edmonton and they have that young core, and, you know, very quickly they were, you know, arguably the best team on the planet. You know, Lemieux came to a tire fire in Pittsburgh in 84. That took a little while to go. But that was sort of part of being that number one draft pick in the National Hockey League. You were going to the worst team. There was no lottery. There was no other way of putting it. And it is true that, you know, while, you know, as he played here longer, there was more talent around him and that was improved. But he lifted up this entire franchise and so many people around him from the minute he set foot on the ice at Winnipeg Arena.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a week of tributes for Dale Hawerchuk in Winnipeg. It seemed like he touched a lot of people as a player, and then when he was a head coach with Barry and running that team for a long time. I know many of the players who played under him were talking about it publicly today. So I'm sure I have no shortage of unique conversations and uplifting ones in a sad time. So thanks for joining us, my man. We appreciate it.
Guys, my pleasure. All the best.